From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Recently, three people were sentenced to prison in Idaho for possessing illegal guns or ammunition. They'll serve a combined 22 years behind bars. Now, all three cases were prosecuted as part of the Project Safe Neighborhoods Initiative from the Justice Department. Now, to find out more about this initiative, which brings together law enforcement agencies from all over our state, we asked Idaho's U.S. Attorney, Josh Hurwitt, back to the show. Josh, it's really nice to have you back on.
Gemma, great to be here. Thanks for having me.
So, Josh, can we just start with the first question? What is Project Safe Neighborhoods?
So, Project Safe Neighborhoods is a longstanding initiative nationwide at the Department of Justice where law enforcement agencies get together with both prosecutors at U.S. attorneys' offices around the country, but also with community stakeholders to do a couple things. One is identify the violent crime problems or risk factors in those specific communities, and then build bridges with stakeholders, but also work really closely in creating a hand-in-hand law enforcement prosecutor team that can target potentially violent criminals. And usually it's focused, as you mentioned, on firearms offenses.
And how long has this initiative been around, Josh?
Oh, boy. Decades, really. In the last few years, we've sort of reimagined it as a department to focus a little bit more on the community stakeholder piece of it to make sure that not only do we have the tools to prosecute crimes, but we have the intelligence to do so in a very smart and effective way. That's what we're trying to do here in Idaho as well.
Mm-hmm. So does the initiative, as you said, it covers gun violence. Would violent crime be in that as well, or is it purely the focus of guns?
It's generally targeted at violent crime.
It
does not have to be only firearm offenses or gun violence. Although, as you know, unfortunately and sadly, as we've seen in this community, gun violence is a really big part of that.
So let's look at one of the cases your office prosecuted under this initiative. Now, this was a man from Oregon who started a high-speed chase in Payette. It ended in Nissa, so across the border in Nissa. So tell us about this case and what happened.
Yeah, absolutely. As you mentioned, a routine and traffic stops, we say routine, but they are never routine, right? No matter what the reason for the stop is, an incident like this can occur, and this is not that unusual. It's not unheard of for a high-speed chase to ensue after a, like I said, the quote-unquote routine traffic stop. This individual did not want to, abide by the law and fled, as he said, across the border at speeds of up to 110 miles an hour into Nissa. Eventually, he was apprehended, and he was found to be in the possession of ammunition. Which is also unlawful under federal law when someone has a prior felony conviction. So he has a lengthy criminal history and was prosecuted for possessing that ammunition, which he was prohibited from doing based on his criminal history.
So in that specific case, my understanding is that you did work with a large number of law enforcement agencies. So who did you work with and how does that partnership work?
Yeah, absolutely. So in this case, we had the Marshal Service on the federal side. We had law enforcement on the Idaho side and the Oregon side, because that's where the defendant ended up. How that works is that law enforcement does a very good job of communicating in real time as an event might unfold across jurisdictions. So as this individual was traveling from Idaho into Oregon, the sheriff's offices communicated, local police, Fruitland, Ontario were prepared to apprehend him, which I believe happened through something called a pit stop or maybe some spike strips across the roadway. The other agency that I neglected to mention so far is the ATF, which is our primary partner on the federal side for firearm offenses, given what they do.
Can you talk about another case? This was the case of a Boise man. His name's Brent Logan, and it included a ghost gun. So before you tell us about the case, can you first tell us what is a ghost gun?
So a ghost gun is a firearm that is not manufactured by a commercial manufacturer. So not your Smith & Wesson, for example. Mm-hmm. They can be personally manufactured or they can be purchased through online sources. They can be 3D printed. So it's something that has not gone through the standard regulatory firearms manufacturing process. And that's very dangerous because it can lead to use in criminal enterprises where individuals don't want to have serial numbers or they don't want to have records of obtaining firearms.
Okay, so then talk to us about this case in particular, the case of Brent Logan.
Right. This is another individual, and just let me pause here for a second. When we prosecute individuals for possessing firearms or possessing ammunition, there's sort of two categories. There are those that are prohibited from possessing firearms due to prior criminal convictions. So that's what occurred in the Logan case. And then there are also the other category are situations where an individual possesses a firearm that is illegal in and of itself, such as a machine gun. But in this case, of the Logan case, Mr. Logan had prior convictions for domestic violence, which is a big issue when we're talking about Project Safe Neighborhoods, and also prior convictions for an aggravated assault. So he was prohibited from possessing any firearms. I'm speculating a bit here, but that might be why he went the ghost gun route. He couldn't go into a licensed dealer and purchase a firearm lawfully. So that's a threat that we have in our community from these ghost guns, is that people that are prohibited from having firearms maybe are looking to ghost guns to get their hands on. So Mr. Logan was determined based on some good investigative work to be in possession of these firearms, and he was arrested. The firearms were seized, and he's spending about 7 years in federal prison now.
So what is it, Josh, about this project in particular that helps you get these more violent criminals behind bars?
So federal prison has its advantages when we're talking about breaking up either organizations involved in gang activity or violent crime, because the individuals are removed from their community and put in a prison out of state. There are no federal prisons in Idaho. So we use that tool with our local law enforcement partners, with our local prosecuting attorney partners, to target the worst of the worst, those that we think are most dangerous. As we've talked about, those that have prior criminal records and are continuing to break the law. So the Project Safe Neighborhood program and what it allows us to do is to really communicate and analyze intelligence to allow us to arrest and go after those that have criminal records, that are continuing to engage in illegal conduct, and that are most likely to engage in acts of violence on our streets. Mm.
So how are you using this initiative to actually help community-based organizations prevent crime?
Absolutely. So one of the aspects of Project Safe Neighborhoods is the grant funding that it provides throughout the country. There are several organizations in Idaho that receive federal grants. Some of them are law enforcement agencies that can purchase equipment. I mentioned the intelligence side of things. There's a program called NIBIN. Don't ask me what that stands for exactly. But it allows law enforcement to take shell casings and match them to firearms to basically trace where shootings occur and connect them to other shootings that may be outside of Idaho, down in the southern part of the country or wherever it might be, to develop a story of that firearm to conduct further investigations. Mm-hmm. So part of what Project Safe Neighborhoods does is fund programming like that. On the community side within Idaho, stepping aside from law enforcement for a second, there are lots of agencies, organizations that provide support to, let's say, at-risk youth, provide educational opportunities. We have one program that works with offenders coming back into society after, serving prison time. So PSN or Project Safe Neighborhood also entails our office working with those stakeholders to not only put the bad guys where they need to be, but then to make our cities, our towns, our counties safer, sort of on the back end of the criminal justice process.
So I want to switch to another case that we wanted to give some attention to. This is a Twin Falls man who was actually shipping guns, including what's known as a Glock switch. So Josh, can you describe this case?
Absolutely. So this is the first prosecution in Idaho of a case involving Glock switches. And that's why I'm really happy to be able to talk to you about it today, because it's very concerning. A Glock switch is a small device that can be inserted into a handgun, so a Glock being a handgun as an example, that turns a semi-automatic weapon, firearm, into a fully automatic weapon. The rate of fire is approximately 1,000 rounds per minute. And there's some really scary videos online of what the Glock switch can do. And it's really dangerous to the community and especially to law enforcement. We've seen around the country incidents in which Glock switches have been used to essentially assassinate law enforcement officers doing their job. And that's, of course, something that we're all thinking about in Idaho with the recent shooting of Deputy Tobin Bolter. So we do not want to see Glock switches proliferate in Idaho. And this is a really important prosecution and an opportunity to send a message that even if you possess these devices, so in this case, it doesn't matter what your criminal history is. This is the type of case in which if you even possess a Glock switch, that's illegal under federal law. And we'll be looking to prosecute individuals who do that.
So you had mentioned how fast these switches can shoot. Where do these switches then come from? I mean, do you get them in the mail? I mean, how do you get something like this?
Yeah, good question. In the case that we're talking about, which involved a defendant named Ryan, he talked and he admitted what was happening. He was obtaining them, I believe, online from overseas, and they were being shipped to his home. They're very small devices. I mean, you could hold one just with a couple fingers in your hand. And then he was either passing them on to a source down in California, and he believed that source was passing them on to the cartels in Mexico. And he was actually found in possession of a firearm with a Glock switch installed, which is a very simple process. So he was both relaying on the switches, but also putting them into firearms that he was then selling to his contact down in California. There is a possibility also of 3D printing these things again, which again shows the nature of what we're up against with how easy it is to both obtain things online and then make them yourself with technology like 3D printers.
Was he selling these guns to a cartel drug dealer, or who was he selling these to?
It was a contact that he said, and I'm sharing public information here, that he said he believed was connected to the cartels. And so that's what he said in his own words.
So this was the first time, is my understanding, that someone in Idaho was prosecuted for these Glock switches. Are you concerned this will become more of a norm here in our state?
I hope it doesn't. I'm very concerned about these type of offenses. The other thing that I can mention is that there's a sort of companion to the Glock switch called an auto sear, which essentially does the same thing for long guns or like the AR platform type weapons. We have prosecuted several of those types of cases before. So this isn't the first time that we've seen a conversion device in general, but this is the first time we've prosecuted the Glock switch, which works for handguns, and we do not want to see that proliferate, like I said.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us about that. Do appreciate it, Josh.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
We've been speaking with Idaho's U.S. Attorney, Josh Hurwit, about the Project Safe Neighborhoods Initiative. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.